It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 33 degrees under fair skies. Out at the airport, they're looking at 52% humidity, calm winds, and 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, firefighters responded to a blaze on Spruce Cape Road yesterday. The policy differences on abortion rights between Alaska's three U.S. Senate candidates were clarified in a debate yesterday. And the hot topic for the debate for Alaska's U.S. House seat, salmon bycatch. Those stories, plus a special dugout canoe built in Angoon, is the first since the late 1800s. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband is in the hospital after he was attacked by an intruder in the couple's home this morning in San Francisco. 82-year-old Paul Pelosi suffered blunt force injuries to his head and body. At a very brief news conference this afternoon, police did not say how the intruder broke in, but according to a source briefed on the attack, it's apparent that he was looking for Nancy Pelosi, a detail that's raising new concerns about political violence in the lead-up to midterm elections. Scott Schaefer of member station KQED is following the story.
The intruder yelled, "Where is Nancy? Where is Nancy?" before attacking Paul Pelosi with a hammer he pulled away from him. The speaker was in Washington at the time. San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott identified the suspect as 42-year-old David DePepe of Berkeley.
Mr. DePepe will be booked at the San Francisco County Jail on the following charges: attempted homicide, assault with a deadly weapon, elder abuse, burglary, and several other additional felonies.
The Pelosi home in the upscale Pacific Heights neighborhood has been targeted before. Someone left a pig's head out front. It was also spray-painted with graffiti, all before the January 6th insurrection. For NPR News, I'm Scott Schaefer in San Francisco.
As the new owner of Twitter, Elon Musk says the company will form a content moderation council with widely diverse viewpoints. Musk is under scrutiny over whether his pledge to open up the social media platform to voices of all kinds will also enable the proliferation of hate speech and misinformation. NPR's Bobby Allen has more.
Twitter has had a trust and safety team that has worked tirelessly, I think, to ensure that the platform is a safe place, as safe as they can make it, to keep the really horrendous stuff off of the platform, right? To draw bright red lines that say, you know what, if you're going to use this as a megaphone to amplify, like, pseudoscience about vaccine safety, we are going to ban you. Will Musk reset all of that? Perhaps. But if he goes too far, he's going to see advertisers flee in droves. And at the end of the day, advertising is how Twitter butters its bread.
Bobby Allen reporting. The Ukrainian Air Force says it has shot down more than 300 self-destructing drones over the course of Russia's invasion. More from NPR's Nathan Rott.
The self-destructing Shahed drone has become a favorite weapon of Russia's in the last few weeks. Swarms of them have been launched at energy infrastructure in cities around the country, including the capital, Kyiv. And although Ukraine has been successful at shooting down many of the slow-moving drones, others have gotten through, damaging infrastructure and killing civilians. The U.S. and Ukraine has accused Iran of supplying the explosive autonomous drones to Russia, a claim that Iran denies. Western intelligence agencies have warned that Russia could be running low on long-range high-precision missiles, a shortage that could explain the recent uptick in drone strikes.
It's NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Firefighters responded to a blaze that consumed multiple outbuildings yesterday morning at a residence in a neighborhood on Kodiak's Spruce Cape in the vicinity of Anna Way. No one was injured and no homes were damaged in the fire. Bayside Fire Department's Assistant Chief Bruce McNeil says the call came in just before 5:30 a.m.
Well, the wind last night was pretty gusty. It was a struggle to get it under control, but we got it.
The National Weather Service had forecasted winds of 30 miles per hour Thursday night with gusts to 50. Three engines and one ambulance responded to help knock down the fire. One of the engines was from Bayside's department. Assistance was requested from both the City of Kodiak and the Coast Guard's fire departments. McNeil said the cause of the blaze is undetermined. Alaska fishermen, processors, and charter operators who reported financial losses due to the pandemic only have a few days left to apply for a second round of COVID-19 relief money. Alaska's Department of Fish and Game announced this summer that the application window had opened for nearly $40 million in CARES Act funding. Fisheries participants must show at least a 35% loss in gross revenue between March and December of 2020 to be eligible. Applicants have till October 31st to apply, and applications mailed in need to be postmarked by that date. Applications are available on the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission's website. That's at psmfc.org. The funds should be distributed by May of next year, according to the Fish and Game's website. The policy differences on abortion rights between Alaska's three candidates for U.S. Senate were clear during a debate on Thursday. Incumbent Republican Lisa Murkowski, Republican Kelly Schiavacca, and Democrat Pat Chesbro appeared together for debate for the state. Schiavacca says she supports a national ban that takes effect sometime in the second trimester. Murkowski said she supports turning the abortion rights from the Roe v. Wade case, which the Supreme Court recently overturned, into law, but with some limits, such as letting medical providers with personal objections opt out. Chesbro says she's pro-choice.
I think it needs to be up to the discretion of the individual, not anyone else. I think it has to be a very difficult decision, and I think we need to let people make those decisions on their own.
Murkowski and Chesbro's interactions were collegial. Schiavacca and Murkowski were much cooler. Throughout the debate, Schiavacca referred to Murkowski only as the incumbent. Schiavacca painted Murkowski as ineffective, supportive of Biden administration initiatives she called extreme, and buoyed by outside interests and money.
When I talk to Alaskans, we just don't want a senator who's bought and bullied by the D.C. establishment. We want someone who represents our Alaska independent voices.
Murkowski said her record shows her commitment to Alaska and that third-party political groups are beyond any candidate's control. She fired back at Schiavacca.
Frankly, she's been gone from the state for 28 years, and she's out of touch with Alaskans and what Alaskans expect and want. Alaskans want results. They don't want partisan political rhetoric.
Alaska Public Media, KTOO, and Alaska's news source produced the debate. Salmon was a hot topic in Wednesday's debate between candidates for Alaska's U.S. House seat. When asked what they would do to address declining salmon stocks, all candidates pointed to bycatch as a continued threat to salmon and crab stocks across the state. KDLG's Izzy Ross has more.
Republican and former Governor Sarah Palin began her answer with a shout-out to Bristol Bay and her time in the region.
Near and dear to my heart, the fish issues, having for years set netted on the Nishigak in Bristol Bay.
She said the state is doing a good job with management, and that it follows the maximum sustainable yield mandate outlined in state law. But she said the federal government needs to step up.
It's the feds who lack the enforcement, the bycatch laws that too many people are getting away with, especially foreign trawlers. They're not allowing those salmon to get back to where they need to be to spawn. We need to bust these people who are doing these illegal activities. You take their vessels, you take their gear, you take their permits, and we start teaching them a lesson.
Bycatch is the accidental harvest of species that fishermen are not targeting. Tribes, communities, and small boat fishermen in western Alaska have been particularly vocal with their concerns about whether and how bycatch has contributed to declines in their salmon returns. Democrat and incumbent Representative Mary Peltola, who previously directed the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission, said she wants to ensure there's funding for research on both the state and federal levels. But she said managers can't wait for those results.
We've got to take precautionary management. We cannot allow metric tons of bycatch of juvenile salmon, crab, and halibut to be thrown overboard every year. This has led to a very devastating collapse of not only salmon but halibut, and now we're seeing it in the crab industry as well.
The Bering Sea snow crab fishery will be closed for the first time in its history this winter, as the number of crabs has dropped by nearly 90% over the past 4 years. Bristol Bay Red King crab populations have also declined drastically, and that fishery will be closed for the second season in a row. Republican candidate Nick Begich agreed trawl bycatch should be addressed immediately, and he pointed to the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the main law regulating fishing in federal waters. One of the late Congressman Don Young's goals was to renew the Magnuson-Stevens Act. In September, the House Natural Resources Committee passed a revision of the act, adding in restrictions on bycatch and naming climate change as a threat to federal fisheries for the first time. Begich wants to proceed with caution.
I think that we need to be careful about how we go through our Magnuson-Stevens Act reauthorization and making sure that we're putting precision language into the act that is actually going to demonstrably improve the sustainability of these fisheries.
Begich also noted that while some runs in the state have declined, Bristol Bay's sockeye salmon returns are at a record high. He said managers must look at why Bristol Bay is succeeding and learn from that. Biologists don't know exactly why Bristol Bay's runs have been so large in recent years, but say it may be due to warming waters, both in the ocean and in freshwater spawning grounds. Other species have not fared as well. King and chum salmon in parts of the bay were at some of their lowest numbers on record in recent years, and neither species has been meeting the minimum goal for sustainability. Libertarian candidate Chris Bai said he saw just 3 king salmon on the Chena River while working as a fishing guide this summer. He also agreed bycatch is an issue.
But just throwing it back doesn't solve the problem. I honestly think we need to get industry more involved in reducing their catch. Otherwise, it's not going to be there. It's only a renewable resource until it's all gone.
Bai also suggested divvying up seats on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council by region rather than race. That council decides fishery policy in Alaska's federal waters. Peltola advocated adding 2 Alaska Native seats to that council as part of the Magnuson-Stevens rewrite. Early voting is underway in many communities across the state. Election Day is November 8th. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
A special dugout canoe was dedicated in Angoon this week. It's the first one built in Angoon since the late 1800s, when U.S. military forces attacked and destroyed the village. Students who helped carve the canoe say the project helped them see their own resilience. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has this story.
Master carver Wayne Price and several teenagers are pushing a long wooden canoe on a wheeled platform. It's bright red, and it stands out against the gray, rainy morning. Some of the teens are wearing Crocs, and others are wearing regalia, blue robes with formline fish beaded onto them. Little kids in bright purple and yellow coats are lifted into the canoe and pushed along like they're in a parade float. The view on this day, 140 years ago, was very different. Everything along this waterfront was in flames in 1882 when the U.S. Navy bombed the village, burning their clan houses and food stores, destroying their fleet of canoes, vital for fishing and hunting for food. The Deshiton and Kutznawu Kwan people were left for the winter with only one boat and no shelter. No one knows for sure how many died that winter. Many of the families in Angoon today are the survivors. The U.S. Navy has never apologized.
I am very, very proud of both my
my teammates that helped me with the steaming process and as a community. Just proud to finally have this new beginning.
Shagane Kyle Johnson is a high school student in Angoon. He helped carve the new canoe, or yak, for the community. He and five other students fasted for a day when they put the boat to the test, adding hot rocks to it and letting the steam expand the wood into shape. It's called steaming the yak open, and it can often make or break the work.
It's a lot easier to learn about our culture and our traditional ways when it's hands-on, like carving a paddle, for instance.
His mom, Kukish Tla Chinera Johnson, teaches Tlingit in the schools and helped with the canoe project. She says this history shows the resilience of the Kutznuwukwan.
We're still here, and our community is thriving, and our students and our children are eager to learn and eager to carry on that part of our culture.
For Kyle, this project has made him hungry to learn more about his culture.
I hope that we start leaning more towards our traditional ways of hunting and gathering and living off the land.
In the spring, the yak will be given a name and launched into the water for the first time, with Kyle and several of his classmates aboard. In Angoon, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Bethel youth are going to the polls this week. It's part of a citywide effort to raise community-minded citizens. For KYUK, Claire Stremple joined Bethel students at the ballot box and has this story.
There's only one question on the ballot. It's up to Bethel students to pick the sign that will mark a local playground.
Today, we're going to be voting with Sharpies.
City Clerk Lori Strickler explains how the vote works. She's talking to a couple dozen middle schoolers at Bethel High School.
You're going to use the Sharpie to fill in the bubble next to your choice. Okay? So that's your election.
She set up voting booths and the city's ballot counting machines on campus. It looks like the real deal, except the backdrop is yellow lockers and classroom doors. There's some gum snapping from the crowd, but everyone's paying attention. The students grab ballots and take turns in the polling booths set up in the school's foyer. Then they line up to feed their votes into the ballot counting machine.
Thank you.
Yeah. Here's your sticker.
Put it upside down.
Yep. And then put it through that.
The city's goal is to make youth in Bethel aware of voting and how impactful it can be.
If the community isn't voting, they're not sharing their voice.
This election may not seem as circumstantial as the upcoming general elections, but Strickler says they're actually related. She says kids can bring a little voter awareness home to their families and maybe even spur the adults to vote.
Having conversations about elections within the household will help encourage the adult voters to look into what's going to be on the ballot, to learn more about the candidates that are on the ballot and the issues that are on the ballot, and then themselves go out and vote on election day.
Nearly 19% of Bethel voters turned out in this year's local elections. That's down a little since the pre-pandemic years, where up to a third of the population might vote. Back at the high school, the students are game. Everyone votes, and the stickers are pretty popular.
I'm 12.
It'll be a while before Hannah Jaffet and Angela Simon can vote in a general election.
5 more years.
But they're already considering whether or not they'll go to the polls.
Maybe.
And a few students even grab the grown-up election materials that Strickler has for them to take home.
Can I get information for the voting?
Yeah, totally. I'm glad you asked.
Thank you.
Do you want a sticker?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Could I get one also?
Yeah, totally.
Adult elections are Tuesday, November 8th this year. Early voting for most Alaska precincts started October 24th. In Bethel, I'm Claire Strimple.
Read diverse, read indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Author Robert Carlyle Taylor's award-winning debut novel, The First Robot President, combines science fiction with political satire, making fun of Democrats and Republicans in equal measure. The novel centers around Thomas Jenkins, a lobbyist, and his robot wife, whose political ambitions land her on the Green Party's 25-20 presidential ticket. Taking a subtle yet savage swipe at the current political climate, Taylor weaves in a political satire with much food for thought on environmental concerns, poverty, and war. We spoke with him about this intriguing and entertaining book.
I worked for the federal government for 40 years. I actually retired in 2018. I spent 19 of those years in the headquarters of a government agency in Washington, D.C. So I rubbed elbows with a lot of politicians, was invited to a ceremony at the White House. We had to park in the parking lot near the West Wing and walk in through the parking garage. So I get on the elevator, and the guy next to me is Al Gore. So, and Al Gore, actually, I mention him several times in the book. I was a great admirer of what Al Gore tried to do when he was vice president.
That's award-winning author Robert Carlyle Taylor on his novel, The First Robot President, which is available wherever books are sold. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the 28th day of October, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:14. It will set again at 6:31. That will give us 9 hours and 17 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 44 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 55 degrees set in 2013 and 2019, and our record low was 14 set in 1999 and then again in 2001. Currently 34 degrees under fair skies. It is a pretty nice day outside. Out at the airport, they are showing east winds to 5, humidity at 46%, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day. High near 39, west winds to 15. For tonight, though, snow before 2 a.m., turning to rain. That rain could be heavy at times. Low around 33 tonight with southeast winds to 25, increasing to 35 after midnight. Could gust as high as 50 tonight. Chance of precipitation, 100% or more. Little or no snow accumulations expected, though. And rain tomorrow, too, at least until 5 p.m. High near 45 tomorrow, northeast wind to 40, decreasing to 30 in the afternoon. Could gust as high as 45. Speaking of wind, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Gale warning through Saturday. Northwest winds to 35 knots, becoming southwest 15 this afternoon, and seas to 14 feet, subsiding to 9 feet this afternoon. But then tonight, southeast 40, seas to 13 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 45, seas to 21 feet. Over in the Shelikof, storm warning tonight, west wind to 30 knots today, turning to southeast 15 this afternoon, sea 6 feet, subsiding to 3 feet this afternoon, but tonight, east winds to 40 knots, becoming northeast 50 after midnight, seas 9 feet, building to 14 feet after midnight, and for tomorrow in the Shelikof, north winds to 40 knots, seas to 14 feet. Well, it's nice weather for the downtown trick-or-treat. That starts in just hours at 3:30 and goes till 5 p.m. officially. So all of Kodiak's little goblins, ghouls, and other trick-or-treaters are invited to wander through participating businesses downtown looking for treats. Be sure to stop by the Shunack Tribal Center first to get a trick-or-treat bag to start. And the KHS Key Club will be providing crossing guards. You can still download a map of participating businesses at the Chamber of Commerce website at kodiakchamber.org. Meetings coming up include the Women's Bay Service Area Board. They will be meeting on Tuesday in the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. Next Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening next Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Coming up November 1st through 3rd, Invasive Species Workshop, efforts to battle the invasive European green crab, which was found in southeast Alaska for the first time this summer, will be the focus of the 2022 Invasive Species Workshop. The Alaska Invasive Species Workshop and the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service will host the workshop in the BP Energy Center in Anchorage, November 1st through 3rd. The workshop will also be available via Zoom. For more information and for the agenda, visit alaskainvasives.org with a slash or contact Gino at 907-786-6315. There is a fee for the workshop. Also online at home, STEMAPALOOZA with the Girl Scouts of America and the Girl Scouts of Alaska. The date is November 1st through 30th. It's a chance to celebrate science, technology, engineering, and math with all girls, grades K through 12. They're invited to explore this month-long event. Visit Girl Scouts of Alaska's website. That's at www.girlscoutsofalaska.org/STEMAPALOOZA to find out details about live virtual programs, at-home activities, competing with your family in STEM trivia, earning a telescope, becoming a citizen scientist, and learning what it takes to put up your STEM dreams into action. Try at least one activity to earn your STEMAPALOOZA patch and or dive in and try all of them. But again, go to the Girl Scouts of Alaska website to find out more. The annual Holiday Bazaar is going on, sponsored by the American Association of University Women. That's happening Saturday, November 5th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Kodiak High School gym. To reserve your booth space, contact Suzanne at solenberger@gmail.com. That's solenbergersuz@gmail.com. Coming November 7th from 6 to 7:30 p.m., a workshop with Cindy Trussell, The Call of the Loon. Loons inspire our imaginations with their haunting calls and mystical behavior. This online presentation will introduce the characteristics of loons, their evolutionary path and life cycle, conservation threats, and their status in Alaska. Learn more about the special meeting of young loons in South Central Alaska. That's happening November 13th from 10 a.m. until finished. And let's see, for more information, you would want to call Well, at any rate, Call of the Loon workshop, and go through the Kodiak College, and that's 6 to 7:30 p.m. November 7th. Also, the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension agent Sarah Lewis and Gina Dion will be offering a series of Tuesday evening workshops. The next one will be November 15th and be canning fruits and berries. For more information, contact Sarah at 907-523-3280, extension 1.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the October 28th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Woo-wee, that was some blustery weather we had. The calm before and after a stormy few days often provides opportunities for great birding. You never know what might blow in with the storm, especially while some birds are still migrating. We've had albatross end up close to shore, and remember the famous white egret that showed up in the Olds River area a few years ago? He was way off track. If you're walking along the bays and shorelines over the next few days, bring your binoculars. You never know what will be out there. Speaking of migrating birds, you heard about the little bar-tailed godwit of the sandpiper family who flew non-stop for 11 days to get from Alaska to Tasmania? Non-stop for over 8,400 miles. And godwits are flappers, not gliders. So that little 5-month-old bird flapped his wings for 11 days straight. That's amazing. The orcas have been visiting the waterfront the past couple of days, too. Again, bring your binoculars when you're stopping to gaze along the waterfront, anywhere from Pier 2, which is City Dock, to along the channel. If you're lucky, you'll see some spouts, and you may even witness a little of the wild kingdom if the orcas are hunting for sea lions. Spend some time this week, before the full moon, to take a look at the night sky. You might see some shooting stars or even a fireball. The torrid meteor shower peaks next weekend, but has already started. Plus, the sky is nice and dark, so you can see Orion, Pleiades, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and, of course, the Big Dipper. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun, and have a safe and happy Halloween. Thanks for listening.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.